Hey, I know you're probably driving or running or cleaning the house or doing something else when you're listening to this, but look, if you're a B2B marketer and you need to start generating revenue from your marketing, then you have to check out our 12-week program, the B2B Incubator. It's built for small, in-house B2B marketing teams with limited time and budget. We give you the strategy, the templates, and the tools to start driving revenue, not just leads. So if you're ready to act on all the advice Kevin and I give you, next time you take that first sip of coffee in the morning, make sure you head to the B2B Incubator and apply now. There's only 10 spots available per cohort, with our next one launching at the end of May 2024. Remember, the B2B Incubator, apply now so you don't miss out. We've had B2B marketing managers, CMOs, marketers in demand gen roles, content leads, and more all go through this program, and they're currently executing the demand strategies that they've created. Some are now even contributing as much as 80% of the pipeline to their business after working through it. Make sure you check out the b2bincubator.com and apply now to start driving more demand and more revenue for your brand. Okay, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to the B2B Playbook podcast. Each week we discuss strategies and tactics to help B2B businesses grow online.
We're your hosts, Kevin and George, a couple of digital marketing professionals. We've waded through the noise and made the mistakes so you don't have to.
The B2B world has changed, and you need to put your customers at the heart of your marketing.
We'll cover how you can use our framework, the 5 B's, to create a brand that customers are ready to buy from, love, and advocate for.
We'll get insights from successful people in the industry and cover the latest trends to keep you on the cutting edge of the B2B world.
If you're interested in B2B marketing strategies and tactics that work, then this podcast is for you.
Subscribe to get the latest from the B2B Playbook first.
Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.
Welcome back to the B2B Playbook, listeners, viewers. We are into season 6 of the show. This is the show where we give away our 5 B's framework for demand generation through seasons 1 to 5. In each of those, we actually gave away a step in our 5 B's framework for demand generation. So through seasons 1 to 5, we gave it all away. Kevin, my beautiful, wonderful co-host, can you tell us a little bit about our 5 B's framework for demand generation, and if people haven't joined us, what they can expect if they go back and listen to it?
Yes, of course, George. So the 5 B's, which is our framework for demand generation that we talked about in the first 5 seasons. If you haven't, we would strongly recommend that you go back and at least listen to the first couple of episodes where we cover off on the framework and what's involved in each of those steps, and then diving into the areas that interest you or are relevant to you. But very quickly, those 5 B's are be ready, be helpful, be seen, be better, and be the best. So be ready was all about deeply understanding your customers. Be helpful, we then talked about how to develop relationships and trust with them online. And then in be seen, we talked about how to amplify the content, the helpful content that you're producing from the second stage or second season that we talked about, and how to amplify that and focus in on those that need that information the most. And be better in season 4 or stage 4 of our framework, we talked about how to optimize a B2B marketing process. And finally, last season, and be the best, we talked about some of those advanced strategies and tactics that the big guys use, and also to circle back on the framework and show why it's circular, how you can implement it and really utilize it going forward in your career and in building a B2B marketing strategy, as well as your demand generation engine.
So that was seasons 1 to 5. It took us around 120 something episodes to get there, Kevin. I'm not sure you and I thought it would take quite that long to share our framework step by step, but it's now out there. It's evergreen. It's there for all you listeners to take and run with. Now in season 6, we're going to kick this off by doing a mini series in demand generation. Demand generation is really where our expertise lies. Kevin and I both worked agency side, in-house. We are B2B specialists. It's what we love doing. We run a program called the B2B Incubator, which is where we help companies run and set up their own demand gen programs. And of course, we still work with a handful of clients to really get our hands dirty and help get that up and running for themselves. So we wanted to address questions that we hear again and again in this little mini series. And each episode is going to be available on YouTube too, as all of ours are. And we're putting a bit more extra effort into these ones. And all of our explanations and examples are going to be complemented by diagrams that I've drawn. I don't think my handwriting is particularly wonderful or my drawings are that fantastic, but we get positive feedback on it again. And it can really help illustrate some of these concepts and make it a little easier to understand. So make sure you check us out on YouTube or the highlights, or I'm sure we'll be there on LinkedIn. So today we want to address that question of, well, what the hell even is demand generation? There are so many different definitions out there. It's a term that has been around for quite some time and it's really picking up steam. We're going to look at how can we define it? Why do we need demand generation? And importantly, how does it even differ from lead generation? Lead generation is often posited as the antithesis to demand generation. And I might argue that this perhaps isn't the case. Kevin, should we kick off with what is demand generation?
Yeah, of course. And I think demand generation really at the end of the day is a go-to-market strategy. It's a go-to-market strategy that helps you build a really intense desire in your dream customers to purchase from you. And that's it. Go-to-market strategy builds intense desire, and that desire resides in your dream customers who are willing to purchase from you. And you'll see in the diagram in the shared stream, if you're watching on YouTube, George has put all those points with different colors, helpfully, into a very simple summary of what demand generation is.
Let's unpack that more, Kevin. So we've broken that down into three key components. We said, first of all, it's a go-to-market strategy that builds an intense desire. That's the second one, to get your dream customer to purchase from you. That's really the third part. And I want to break down each of those three parts for our listeners. So first of all, some people might be listening and they might be going, well, what even is a go-to-market strategy? What does that mean? A go-to-market strategy is really a step-by-step plan that's designed to bring your product to market and to drive demand. It's the plan that gets your product in front of your dream customers, and it convinces them that they should buy from you. Now, we believe the go-to-market strategy should, of course, derive from business goals. It should align with KPIs to measure the success. And of course, there should be a plan. No go-to-market strategy is useful without a proposed plan of how to execute it step by step. That's, of course, what we give you guys here with our 5Bs framework, and it's very important to have that plan and to document it. So that's what a go-to-market strategy is. Okay, so if demand generation is our go-to-market strategy, we said that it's also designed to build an intense desire in our dream customer. There's two parts here. So the first is driving an intense desire. Now, step into the shoes of your dream customer. They receive emails, cold calls, LinkedIn DMs, and so many other avenues. They've received so many messages from people trying to sell them stuff every single day. And often they're actually trying to sell them stuff that your customer actually needs and is going to help them, but still they ignore it. I'm sure you've done it. I've done it. We have people email us in our DMs telling us that they can help us with our content repurposing. There was one period of time where I was interested in something like that before we developed our own system, and I just completely ignored it. What we need to do as a demand generation marketer is we need to build an intense desire in this person to buy from you. And if you're going to do that, you need to first make them prioritize the pain that you can provide the solution to. So we've got here in our diagram, we've got a sad looking person. This is your dream customer. They're sad because it's your job as the demand gen marketer to make them feel the pain as much as possible that you help them solve. So you need to get them to prioritize that. So your dream customer has so many different things going on in their jobs and they have a lot of different problems that they want solved. You need to make them prioritize that particular pain that you help fix. And by doing that and showing them that, hey, if you fix this pain, these are all the wonderful things that can happen, i.e. take them to the promised land to a pleasure state. And of course, here in that diagram, we've got a nice happy face. That is where we need to get them to as the demand gen marketer. And really that journey is about building desire. So we need to make them want to get from that pain state through to that pleasure state. And that is really our job as demand generation marketers. We also need to make them want to buy it from you over anyone else. So it's not enough just to make them want to fix this problem and to realize all the amazing things that can happen to them and their career and their job if they fix it. We need to make them realize that you guys are actually the perfect solution for them. Otherwise, we're building demand for someone else to take from you. So that is your job as the demand gen marketer. The second part to building an intense desire is that you need to build an intense desire in your dream customer. Now, your dream customer is not your TAM or what we would call your total addressable market. It isn't everyone who could buy your product. It is a segment of this total addressable market that we've indicated through this slice of pie in our pie chart that are more likely to prioritize the pain that you help solve and also a segment that you have enough resources to win over. So remember that your dream customers isn't 100% of the total market that could buy your product. It's just a slice of that pie that you have the resources to win over right now, and they're more likely to have the desire to fix the problem that you can help solve.
And in fact, listeners, your dream customers are basically helping you define your niche. You need to niche down from your TAM to actually start to build that demand generation strategy, the go-to-market strategy, because you can't actually hit everyone within your TAM right away. And it's not going to be the same message that goes to everyone in your TAM in any case. So it's important to have this concept or idea in your head that you actually need to go after your dream customers, a segment or the niche of your TAM that you need to focus in on first in your demand generation.
And then Kev, the third point is we've got to get them to purchase from you. And the key point there is you. As we mentioned, they need to want to buy this solution from you over the competition. And that means that you need to show your dream customer that not only do they need to prioritize the problem that you help fix, but that your solution is actually perfect for them and unmatched by your competition. Now, much of this comes down to your positioning and your messaging and how you build trust with your dream customers earlier in their buying journey. And that's really, Kev, the three main core components to what demand generation is. Again, it's a go-to-market strategy. It builds an intense desire in your dream customer to purchase from you. And that's really breaking down what demand generation is. Okay, now, Kev, we've got our broad definition of what demand generation is. Let's unpack that more. The way I see it, Kev, the way that we see it is there's really two key components to demand generation. That is creating demand and capturing demand. Now, capturing demand is the activities that most marketers are doing, and it's what most people do when they start marketing for a business. It's about targeting and trying to win over the companies that are actively looking for a product or solution like yours right now. Roughly, that accounts for 3 to 5% of your total market. So if your total market is 100 buyers, if there's potentially 100 companies you can work with, at any given time, roughly 3 to 5 of those, 3 to 5%, are going to be looking for a solution like yours right now. And that's where capturing demand comes in. Creating demand is the other 95% of the market. And they're the ones who are not ready to buy yet, either because they're unaware that they have a problem that you can help them with, or they just haven't prioritized that problem yet. Before we go into these and why they're both important, I think it's helpful to first look at the framework for the buying journey and understand a little bit more about that. It's called the 5 stages of awareness, and I think it's really going to help clarify a lot of why you both need to simultaneously create demand and why you need to capture demand. All right, folks, quick breather here. In my time in B2B marketing, generally I've come to realize that there are just certain tools that can be an absolute game changer. And that's why I'm really excited to talk about LeadFeeder. It's a tool that helps you cut through the data and turn those website visitors into solid leads and opportunities for your business. LeadFeeder shows you which companies are checking out your site, tracking their behavior, and it integrates all of this with your CRM. And the result is it's basically like a secret weapon for targeted lead engagement, and it really makes it easier for your team to convert website traffic into sales. Head to leadfeeder.com, give it a free demo, and you'll also get a free extended premium trial when you let the rep know that you found out about LeadFeeder through the B2B Playbook podcast. That's leadfeeder.com. Okay, check it out. Back to the show.
All right, so listeners, the five stages of awareness. Basically, every buyer goes through their own unique journey to purchase, but this is a great framework for thinking about that journey in a more regimented way. The five stages of awareness is that buying journey that a prospect will take from being unaware, right there at the top of that funnel you're seeing in the other feed if you're watching on YouTube. It starts with unaware that they even have a problem that you can help them with, to being led down to a logical conclusion that you're the perfect solution for them. And that is effectively the journey that we hope you'll be building content, you'll be building effective resources for your dream customers to bring them along this journey through the five stages of awareness yourself. And what does that look like? What we said, it started with unaware. At this stage, your potential customers are not even aware that they have a problem or need your product or service. And by volume, this is generally the largest segment because most people really aren't thinking that clearly about their problems, their pain points. That they are also the most challenging group to market to because they're so big, they're so unaware, there's so much education that needs to happen at that stage to really get them to start on this journey with you into your product and the solution that you can provide them. So that's the first stage of awareness. Then it goes to problem aware. Here, the customers have realized that they have a problem, but may not know the solutions available. They probably have a lot of questions at this point, and even about the problem itself, they're aware of what it is, but maybe they haven't defined it properly, and they certainly have not started to research the possible solutions that are available to them. After this stage, those customers move into the third stage, which is solution aware. So at this point, customers are aware that they have a problem. They're probably much clearer on their problem now and what that entails. And they're also likely to be aware of various solutions to that problem. But they may not necessarily be aware of your specific product or service at this stage. They don't necessarily know about you, your brand, and what you offer, and what are the benefits that your product or service can offer to them if they want to solve or sort out that problem that they're now aware of. They might be aware of some of the other solutions available in the market, but maybe they don't know everything about your solution. The stage after this is product aware. So product aware is the stage where customers know about your product and service as well, but are still comparing it to other options in the market. After product aware comes most aware. Most aware is the final or fifth stage of awareness. And this is where customers are fully aware of your product and those products within the market that's available to them and all its benefits and potential shortcomings and how it compares to competitors. They're thinking about making that purchase decision. They're on the brink of that and they just need a final nudge to put down the credit card to go through that payment. So that's the five stages of awareness that you should really be aware of when you're looking at demand generation and understanding the buying journey that all potential customers go through when they're getting into that buying funnel, when they're getting to understand what the problem is, and then all the way to that purchase decision. And you should really be keeping this in mind as you start to put together your demand generation strategy.
Okay, let's go back to that five stages of awareness. And again, we're looking at the diagram. And the issue that most marketers have, Kevin, tying this back to creating demand and capturing demand and how they feed into the two parts of demand generation, is that most marketers focus pretty much all of their attention on this part. And I've highlighted really targeting those that are solution aware, product aware and most aware. So they're targeting buyers that are in market right now. And they might be doing that through activities like targeting keywords that are searched by people who are looking to buy a product like yours right now on Google or on review sites like G2, for example. Let's say you're selling a CRM that's designed for salespeople. You might bid on search terms like CRM for growing sales teams. It's people with high intent. They're searching for it. You're out there to capture the demand that they already have. These activities, Kev, solution aware, product aware, most aware, they're a great place to start. But the issue is with marketers focusing on just those areas alone, and this has happened to us a number of times, it's how we learned this lesson the really hard way, is that just focusing on those who are ready to buy right now, it doesn't scale. So those that are solution aware, product aware, most aware, research shows that roughly only accounts for 3-5% of your market right now. The other 95% are not ready to buy right now. So what that means is as you grow, you and your competitors are trying to capture a bigger piece of the same size pie. If your market isn't expanding, the competition is probably increasing, which tends to happen. Your costs go up and it becomes unsustainable to just capture demand alone because you're all just trying to capture more and more of that 3% that are in the market right now. It's like jumping into a pool full of sharks and every quarter, more and more sharks get thrown in the pool and there's the same number of fish. Kev, there's another kind of interesting and a little bit scary piece of research to add into the mix here, and that's from Bain & Co. And that shows that 80 to 90% of buyers buy the brand that came to mind first on day one. So that means that only 20% of buyers who are in market to buy your product right now will consider buying from you if they haven't heard from you before. So if you are only capturing demand, if you are only trying to target people who are looking for a solution right now, you are only going to be able to try and win over roughly 20% of the 5% who are searching right now. So to simplify things again, if you've got 100 people in your market, just to simplify things, if there's 100 companies, let's say 5%, so 5 companies are in market to buy right now, only 20% of the 5 companies would be willing to buy from you. What does that take us to, Kevin? 1. That takes us to 1 company. And so that's why it can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack when we're kicking things off and when we're trying to scale. I've experienced this pain, Kev. I know you have, of only operating in the solution aware, product aware, most aware stages. It sucks. It's a hard position to be in as a performance marketer or as a marketer generally. And really this research and these statistics show why it is so difficult to make that scale. So Kev, demand creation actually looks at the other 97% of the market who are not in buy mode. They're people who are typically problem aware, meaning they're just exploring what that problem means for them, or even unaware of the fact that they have a problem. So your job with demand creation is to build a relationship, to win their trust, and to make them prioritize that problem, and then to lead them to the logical conclusion that you're the best product or service available for fixing that problem. That's exactly what we detailed in our 5Bs framework, which we've given away here over the first 5 seasons of the B2B Playbook podcast. It's something that we found there wasn't a lot of information on how to actually create demand step by step. I think, Kev, there's actually quite a lot of resources when it comes to capturing demand, meaning those who are solution aware, product aware, most aware. But when it comes to creating demand, which is actually getting in front of the 95% of the market who aren't ready to buy yet, that's where people really struggle. And a healthy demand engine should both create and capture demand. And we're here to really show people how to create it.
And listeners, it has the added benefit when you start to focus in on demand creation, that half of the demand generation process that people don't tend to focus on, there's the added benefit of flipping all those grim stats we were just talking about in your favor. So instead of going after the 20% who are potentially interested in you, who maybe have heard of you before and would potentially buy from you, you're now talking to the 80, 90% that could potentially buy from you someday. And you become the first brand that they hear about for a particular pain point. And you become the first solution that they then compare all other solutions to. So you're really flipping all those stats in your favor. And as George said, a healthy demand generation engine really needs to focus on both the demand creation side and the demand capture side. And just to add a little bit more nuance to the resources out there, you'll see a lot of stuff, as George said, about capturing demand out there. A lot of the skill set in the marketplace is in that space. Demand creation, the content is a little bit more scattered. There's pockets here and there of different tactics and strategies that might apply to that. And what we really try to do with the 5Bs framework is put that in a way so that you can really action it quite logically, or at least have a framework in mind when you come across these different points, helpful points, tactics, and things like that. You know where it slots in, you know where to focus in your efforts based on your business or your particular use case of where you are in that demand creation journey or demand capture journey. And just keep in mind that it's not one or the other. You have to have both firing at the same time, working together to have a really healthy demand generation engine and ultimately a strong B2B marketing strategy.
That's right. And the earlier you start creating demand, the easier it's going to be for your business. Kev, I've got one more graph here on my whiteboard that for those that are watching, I think will find quite interesting. It's one that I post reasonably regularly on LinkedIn, and it always seems to resonate with a lot of marketers. And it really details why you should start your marketing much earlier on in the five stages of awareness. What it shows on one axis, Kevin, is competition, and on the other, the buyer journey. And what it shows is that the competition for people's attention really isn't very high until you get to later in the buying journey, those that are solution aware and product aware and most aware. And that's because, as we said, everyone is pouring their resources into trying to capture that existing demand, because they're trying to hit targets, because they've been given this lead target from their boss or their VC or whoever it is, and they're trying to hit it as well as they can. And absolutely they should. But what that means is, as we said, it's very, very difficult if you're all going after the same sized piece of pie. The opportunity there for the marketer is to start marketing in that unaware and problem aware phase much earlier in the buying journey, the first two stages, because it's comparatively cheaper to start marketing to those people, because other companies haven't identified them as people who are potentially in market yet or potential buyers. That means that the competition for their eyeballs and attention is less. And that means it's an amazing opportunity for you as the market to start developing a relationship with them right at the beginning of their journey. So you get to act as the Sherpa for them on that buying journey. That means that you get to dictate a lot of the information that they consume from early to the midsection of that journey, and then later on as well. And of course, that means that once they're ready to buy, if you've put the pieces of content in front of them that helps them on that journey, they're going to be led to the logical conclusion that you're the best fit for them. So that is the opportunity for marketers, is that your competition probably aren't investing in doing it. And so it's much easier to get in front of people there and build that relationship with them. That's going to pay huge dividends down the road, and ultimately what's going to help you scale.
That's right, listeners. Just keep in mind that concept that unaware, it really is that stage where the competition is the lowest. Start marketing there. It's a lot more cost effective, a lot cheaper, and a lot easier to start at that point. As George said, the earlier the better, and that will have a much more significant impact down the track. If you're a total addressable market, if your dream customer pool starts at 100 people rather than 20 people, then you can imagine when you get to the most aware stage, you're much more likely to have the numbers to sustain your business, rather than going after that one or two potential customers out of 100 at that most aware stage.
Kev, I think that kind of details what demand generation is, how it's comprised of demand creation, demand capture, how it maps the five stages of awareness. I think now I want to go ahead and just quickly discuss another question that we get, which is, how is this different from brand marketing? Now, brand marketing can also be quite loosely defined, Kevin, as demand generation can be. Now we've placed some constraints around our definition of demand generation, we might be able to look at the difference between the two of these. I would say, Kevin, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, but I acknowledge that there is some overlap. Demand generation marketers, I would say, Kevin, they really pride themselves on looking further down the funnel to tie their impact to bottom line metrics like opportunities and revenue. They really do their best to connect even their demand creation activities to pipeline. And so I would say that's a key distinction for a demand generation marketer, is even when we're out there trying to create demand, we want to make sure that's done in a resource efficient way that ultimately leads to pipeline. Attribution is a tricky conversation, but I think that demand generation marketers generally fight like hell for attribution. And that's something that really sets us apart. That, and of course, the fact that demand generation marketers are expected to be well-versed in demand capture as well, which is actually at the point where we are taking that person from being totally unaware that they have a problem, just like brand marketing does, to being led to the logical conclusion that you're the perfect solution for them. We've got to then capture them at that point where they're ready to buy. And that is not normally the focus of brand marketing. So demand generation is normally a lot more holistic as a concept. They're my thoughts, Kevin. I'd love to get yours.
I think the point you made around just then around demand generation being a lot more holistic is probably the one that I would emphasize. I do think that demand generation looks holistically at the buyer's journey. As we've gone through the five stages just now, we've shown that, in fact, when you're looking at demand generation properly, it encompasses all those different stages of the buying journey. I think brand marketing really focuses in on that unaware stage and really goes in probably with a different set of objectives to demand generation. As you said, by our definition of demand generation, you're really trying to get people to go through this funnel from that unaware stage down to most aware. But because you're acting as the Sherpa, you're actually increasing the size of that funnel as much as possible, because you're increasing who or the volume that's coming through at the top end of the funnel. Whereas brand marketing is really just purely focused on that idea of increasing that unaware stage as much as possible, but it's almost stopping there in the sense that probably the business, the product, or whatever the model is, happens to be quite good at the rest of the funnel. So they really only need to grow the top end at the unaware stage. So really brand marketing is just a different approach for a business that effectively has a strong closing system in place, and they probably just need to add more awareness or at least uplift the brand's trust or reputation at the top end. And that can be a very valid strategy for businesses that perhaps work in different spaces, the likes of really big FMCG brands. Potentially everyone knows about them already, but it's just about bringing them back into the awareness of the potential pool of consumers. It's a very different play, demand generation. Whereas I think in B2B marketing, where our focus is, where the podcast's focus is and our own interest is, demand generation is a lot more relevant as a go-to-market strategy, because for our potential customers, dream customers of our own, our listeners, when you're looking at B2B marketing, when you're looking at this in smaller businesses to larger businesses that work with other businesses, naturally the pool that you're looking at is much smaller. So the brand marketing play probably isn't quite right. You do need to look directly at your pipeline impact, because you only get so many shots at the prize before you start to run out of resources. So you need to be very conscious of what's the end goal, how efficient are we being even at those early stages in trying to talk to the unaware stage of the buyer journey. And so that's why demand generation is more of a relevant go-to-market strategy for us in this context, talking about B2B marketing strategy. And I think that's where the difference comes in. Yes, as you said, there's a lot of overlap. Yes, you can almost say that brand marketing is part of demand generation, but I would say it's more different strokes for different folks depending on the scenario that they're in. Brand marketing potentially is more relevant in big B2C contexts, whereas demand generation is probably a lot more relevant to look at when you're in a B2B marketing context.
Yeah, I think you broke that down really nicely, Kevin. I think they're fantastic additions. I really liked your example of FMCG too. I think that makes a lot of sense to have a brand marketer there, and perhaps less so in the context of a B2B organization, particularly one that is newer or growing. I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, what about demand generation versus lead generation? Often, Kevin, lead generation is presented as the antithesis to demand generation. People always say you shouldn't do lead gen, you should do demand gen. And lead gen people often argue the opposite thing. And I'm not here to poo-poo lead generation, Kevin. Look, I actually think that executed lead generation is actually very similar to capturing demand. It's about identifying those who are actively in buy mode and are more likely solution aware, product aware, and most aware, capturing their contact information and nurturing them until they express enough intent for you to pass them on to sales. This can include requesting a demo or booking a free trial, or if maybe you're a little light on these because you're a little earlier stage, maybe garnering intent based on their activities like visiting pricing pages multiple times, visiting a LinkedIn profile, however it is that you can also gauge intent. The problem is that most companies incentivize their marketers to practice bad lead generation, Kevin. And what we just described before, that's not bad lead generation. That's pretty good lead generation. But most are incentivized to do bad lead generation. What they are incentivized to do is to generate as many marketing qualified leads as possible, which are often poorly defined. That means that many marketers, they then do these activities like putting together an ebook, a gated ebook. They use ads to run it to their target audience in exchange for their contact details. Marketing then get all these, what they call marketing qualified leads, people who filled out their contact details in exchange for the ebook, and they shovel these contacts onto sales as leads. What happens next, Kev, is sales get pretty pissed off. Sales contact these leads. Most of the leads have no idea who the company is. They weren't looking for a solution and they didn't want to be contacted. Before organizations realize that this is a really inefficient way to grow, more and more salespeople tend to get hired to service these leads that marketing are capturing. And all of a sudden you have a whole army of salespeople calling these people that marketing has sent them that have no intent to buy from you at all. And it turns into a huge waste of time. All of a sudden, everyone points the finger at marketing and they say, what you're doing isn't working. If you look at the number of opportunities and closed won deals that come from this kind of lead generation, you'll see that it's completely unsustainable, especially when you take into account the cost of sales servicing, calling, emailing, all those no intent leads that you're sending. Now we've got another diagram up on our whiteboard, which just shows a bit of a comparison of the approach of bad lead generation versus good demand generation. On the left-hand side, we show lead generation. Let's say the funnel starts with 500 leads that you've collected. The number of opportunities that you get from that could be about 1%. So maybe 5 opportunities, and the number of customers that you win from there is 20%. So let's say you win 1 in 5 opportunities. That means from 500 leads, you've got 1 customer. Demand gen, on the other hand, because it covers the full buying journey, because you're not handing off people to sales who aren't ready to buy yet, the model is very different. It might start with far fewer leads and they're much higher intent leads, but let's just say it's about 100 leads instead. From those, you get about a 15% opportunity rate. So from that 100 leads, you get 15 opportunities. And then from those, we have the same close rate of 20%, which gets you to 3 customers. So in the lead gen model, we had 1 customer from 500 leads. And in the demand gen model, we have 3 customers from 100 leads. Now, the way that you run your demand gen program, it's very likely that it's going to be much more resource efficient for you to collect leads and win deals that way. And so you, as the marketer, it's your job to compare the two models for your business. First of all, investigate if you're running lead gen, is this working for you guys? Or is the cost of having your sales team sort through all these leads, contact all these people to find the needle in the haystack, is it costing your business too much money versus demand generation, where it's marketing's job to really try and let the buyer educate, nurture themselves, do a lot of that work for sales themselves, and only deal with those who have much higher intent, which leads to greater opportunity rates, which leads to strong close rates.
George, I think we've seen this happen in a lot of organizations, and sometimes they do different things to try and fix that. They do things like better qualification of leads, potentially looking at doing some lead scoring to try and improve the quality. And while that can lead to high intent leads coming through and being sent through to sales over time, that definitely can work. Often these organizations are then spending so much resources fixing a problem that they didn't need to have in the first place. And instead, they probably could have gotten in the same place if they had just purchased those contact details from a database of some sort, which probably would have been cheaper than going through all this whole ordeal. But even better than that, what we're proposing here is that you focus in on demand generation rather than lead generation. Because really, if you think about back to that definition of what demand generation is, and through the five stages of awareness, lead gen really, again, is only focused on from nurture down. So maybe from the third awareness stage down. So quite similar to demand capture, but maybe just one stage or one step further up from that. But at the same time, you're still really only limited to a much narrower part of the funnel. So maybe you're looking at solutions aware, problem aware, down. You're not looking at that unaware stage or problem aware stage in enough detail as you would in a demand generation led strategy, go to market strategy. If you were, you'd be doing things to qualify those people interested in your brand and in your product and service a lot earlier in the process. People will come knocking rather than you reaching out and trying to almost gamify stealing their contacts or getting their contacts into your database somehow. You don't need to purchase those databases for the contact details. You don't need to get them through ebooks that then lead to poor quality leads. If you're doing demand generation, probably you're guiding people who are feeling that pain, those dream customers who are most likely to buy from you. You're generating that high purchase intent within those dream customers who are perfectly suited to your product or service, and they will come knocking. And if they're not coming to knock based on your demand generation work, whatever you then build in place of that lead nurture process for your lead generation will do the rest of the heavy lifting for you. But it all starts with a strong demand generation led strategy right at the beginning. And in future episodes, we'll get on to how to assess lead generation, potential leads that's stopping you from scaling. We'll talk about how to make a business case. If you're already at that stage of lead generation, how to make that business case to invest more into demand generation. But at this stage, we definitely want to call out that given our definition of demand generation, how it compares to how traditionally lead generation and brand marketing is understood, this is why demand generation is so important to start as early as possible, because it will really help unlock the scale and growth in your B2B marketing strategy.
It's the strategy that we're huge fans of, one that we've seen work time and time again. It works because it is much more closely mapped to the way buyers buy and what they want. It's when you're a buyer, it's exactly what you want. Think about how you research and buy things. Demand generation really just tries to fulfill that and make things as easy for the buyer as possible. Of course, that's why you can develop a relationship with them. And of course, that's why you're able to acquire customers cheaper. The issue is, Kev, as we said, not a lot of people talk about how do you actually go about creating demand. Everyone's getting pretty decent at capturing the demand, but we're the ones who would love to share our own framework for demand creation that we've helped lots and lots of businesses put in place. And that's what our B2B Playbook podcast is all about. And that's what our program, the B2B Incubator, is all about too. All right, Kev, what were the key takeaways for today?
Listeners, the key takeaways for this episode is first that our definition of demand generation is a go-to-market activity or strategy that builds an intense desire in your dream customers to purchase from you. Second, if you only capture demand, it's very unlikely you'll be able to scale sustainably as an organization. Demand generation means that you need to be generating or creating demand as well as capturing demand. And finally, lead generation isn't inherently bad. It's the way that it's being executed in organization that means that marketing isn't driving any real impact. Instead, we would encourage you to look at demand generation and how you can implement that instead. When that's done properly, lead generation will be a very beneficial part of that strategy. And that's the key takeaways from this first episode of season 6, listeners, as we get into this mini series on demand generation.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kevin. Listeners, as always, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes. And we're so grateful that each week more and more marketers tune in every Monday. If we can ask one thing, it would be to please pass the show on to someone who you think would get value from it. It's a huge help to us, our future listeners, and we'd really appreciate it. Also, make sure you check out our show on YouTube. There were plenty of helpful diagrams to complement this episode, and we will do more and more in future episodes. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Kevin. Take care and catch you next week.
Thank you, George. Thank you, listeners. Take care and see you all next week.
A quick note before you go, listeners. You can find more great content and get in touch with us at theb2bplaybook.com.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and our newsletter while you're there to get the latest news, tips, and resources from our playbook.
We'll be back the same day and same time with another episode next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the B2B Playbook. Remember, successful B2B marketing starts with the buyer.